So our first speaker is François Meslin, who has his doctorate in veterinary medicine from Lyon, France. He has occupied various positions in the World Health Organization in veterinary public health and zoonoses prevention and control. He coordinated with WHO scientific activities for the promotion of wildlife rabies control in Europe and dog rabies in the developing world using oral vaccines. He also led the WHO activities on BSE and other TSE from 1989 to 1997. He's currently heading the WHO team in charge of strategy development and monitoring of zoonoses, foodborne diseases, cholera, and other epidemic enteric diseases, leishmaniasis, and African trypanosomiasis, a truly extraordinarily broad charge, in the Department of Communicable Diseases Control, Prevention, and Eradication in Geneva. He was convener of the recent WHO-FAO-OIE International Consultation on Emerging Zoonoses, which was held in May of this year. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kent, for the introduction. Good morning to everybody. It's a pleasure for me to be in New York once again. I have been here quite a few times before. And I want to thank the organizers of this meeting for giving me this opportunity. Before I start, I want to mention something, which is that I have slightly changed the title of the presentation as it stands in the program by adding zoonotic to the title, which was History of Avian Influenza. I'll be talking mainly of the zoonotic aspects of avian influenza. As you know, influenza A viruses are common to man or humans, to be more politically correct, and animals. And in fact, looking at this diagram, which is very simple, but which would take maybe 1 hour to explain fully, you see that in fact the disease or these viruses are more common to animals than to man. It affects swines, domestic poultry, marine mammals, sea mammals, equines, and all these influenza viruses, as we understand it today, are originating from this reservoir composed of wild birds, wild ducks, short birds, terns, shearwater gulls. They are harboring all the hemagglutinin and neuraminidase genes that are used to characterize those viruses. I'm not throwing the anathema on this particular group. I'm not the great smiter here. I want to point out, because we discussed it briefly before starting the meeting, that it doesn't mean that this group of animals, of birds, wild birds, are the origin of highly pathogenic influenza viruses, and this is a big difference which may lead to further discussions afterwards. What I'm going to concentrate on is the zoonotic avian influenza viruses. There is in influenza A viruses host specificity, some host restriction, but this host restriction is not very tight. It's in fact loose in nature, and viruses tend to change hosts. But this is not a very it's not very often that this happens. Talking about avian influenza viruses causing human disease, I have divided the data I have in two groups: pre-1997, where we only heard about sporadic and mild disease conjunctivitis due to H7N7 in human beings. And these were the only report we had of this change of host or crossing of the species barrier. And then post-1997, there is an acceleration of the number of reports of such events, with the 1997 H5N1 Hong Kong outbreak, on which I will provide more details. The 1998, 1999, and 2003 H9N2 in Hong Kong again and Guangdong in China. The 2003 H5N1 isolation or characterization in two patients with one death in China again, and the 2003 H7N7 in the Netherlands with a number of cases of conjunctivitis, also association of conjunctivitis and flu-like symptoms and other symptoms, a total of 89 cases. On which I'll provide more information. In 2004, then the H5N1 Asian outbreak with human cases in Vietnam and Thailand. So you see that there is clearly a shift in between pre-1997 and 1997 onwards, with a multiplication of the number of events, with increasing number of people involved in those events. And all this in the context of the outbreaks of highly pathogenic avian influenza in birds, especially domestic birds, chicken, turkey. And you see here again, you can divide in two different periods, these events in two different periods. The period from 1959 to 1985, during which a limited number of such outbreaks were reported, with a relatively small number of birds involved, and then the post 1985, and you see that from 1991 to 2003, in 12 years, a large number of such outbreaks have been reported, and involving a large number of birds. As you may know, the 2003 avian influenza H7N7 in the Netherlands has led to either death or destruction of 30 million birds. So you have this context, and you may wish, you know, to link the two situation, humans versus animals. The H5N1 incident of 1997, just to remind you that the outbreak of H5N1, the first outbreak of H5N1 in Hong Kong, there was an index case which was related to the fact that there was avian flu in chicken farms in Hong Kong. In May 1997, a child was affected and H5N1 was isolated. But nobody really paid attention to this first case, which was in May. And as you know, the outbreak of influenza H5N1 in Hong Kong, in fact, the one we've all heard about, started in November and ended up at the end of December, involving 18 persons, 18 cases, confirmed cases, with six unfortunate deaths. And this led to the destruction of 1.2 million birds, I mean mainly chicken, in a major curl that took place in December and led to the disparition, the disappearance, sorry, of this H5N1 virus from Hong Kong. There has been, in the following years, 1999, mild cases of H5N2 in Hong Kong again. In 2003, a child was shown to be affected by H9N2. Here it's important also, sorry, for 1999, there was evidence that the virus had been circulating beyond these two cases, since up to 30% seroprevalence rate was found in poultry workers. The H7N7 outbreak in Holland, 2003, and this is the epidemic curve as it was built. And it shows the reports of essentially conjunctivitis by date of onset of symptoms. What is very important is when the H7N7 was identified in the Netherlands, the Ministry of Health gathered all its experts and asked them what are the chances that H7N7 leads to human disease and death. And the expert panel was very clear, saying, well, there is really, it's very unlikely. If most of the cases have been mild cases of mostly conjunctivitis, there was one death in that series. And Further to this outbreak and its control, Dr. Koopmans, working for the Ministry of Health and the university, has been conducting follow-up studies. And in a recent meeting in Europe, she has been stating that more infection, more disease, and different clinical presentation than expected were seen in this outbreak. And in particular, at a posteriori, after the outbreak, she has detected a high proportion of case family members seropositive. So the disease went beyond what was initially reported during that period of time, February, June 2003. Moving to the Asian outbreak, you know that this outbreak started at the end of 2003, has involved a number of Asian countries. I'm sure that Dr. Luboth from FAO will talk more about the animal aspects of it. I just want to point at these green dots, which are the cases in humans, which have occurred in Thailand and Vietnam. And this is the period, let's say, end of 2003 to March 2004. This is the situation as of today. There was a reemergence of cases of outbreaks during July and August in China, in Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, and unfortunately additional cases of human disease have appeared during this period, July-September. Here is the number of cases which have been confirmed in Thailand and Vietnam alone, although the disease was more widespread. I think that this is up to date, but I'm not so sure because now the situation is becoming more complex with, instead of just cases which are confirmed, we have suspect and probable cases which are coming in. So I think that it's something like 42 cases and 30 deaths. Description of the disease, I think that is something which is important. It's that it's mostly affecting males and mostly affecting young males. And the interval between onset of symptoms and death is, on average, 13.5 days. Something which is very important is that it's a disease that kills humans and kills, especially here you have in the dark color, is the death. And this is the number of cases per age group. You see that the disease is a killer disease in that small series. I know that it's something that can be discussed, but in that small series, you see that within the age group, newborn to 20 years old, the mortality rate is about 80%. This is the clinical features. Well, it's there is nothing really specific in this. And I'll just move to something which is very important. Is a question which has been asked many times is why is it that it has happened, I mean the cases in humans and the death, in only two of the eight countries in which this H5N1 virus, highly pathogenic influenza virus, was circulating. And from studies conducted in China, Hong Kong, here comes at least part of the answers, which is that the viruses which are circulating in Indonesia and those circulating in Thailand and Vietnam are clearly belonging to different clades. And here you have at the bottom of the slide the clade which is, Vietnam and Thailand cluster, and then you have the Indonesian virus, and they are relatively far apart from each other. Why is WHO so much concerned by something which seems to be mainly an animal health problem? You know, and we are concerned because we see the increasing number of human avian influenza cases, although it's a trickle. It's a relatively small number. But we know from the study in the Netherlands and other studies in Hong Kong that, in fact, what we see is certainly the tip of the iceberg, that the virus is more widespread in humans than it seems to be. H5N1, highly pathogenic, is circulating in animals, and the situation now is endemic in all those infected countries. We know it's not under control for reasons that Dr. Luboth will explain, and we know that it's going to last, as infected countries are not yet equipped to cope with a problem of this size. There is co-circulation of human and influenza viruses. And this will continue and even increase within the forthcoming month, because this is going to be the winter. There will be a decrease of the cold season is coming, so there will be more circulation of influenza, human influenza viruses, so more chances for eventual reassortment. Coming to this risk, the risk of genetic reassortment is therefore increasing with what we fear is the possible emergence of a pandemic strain to which most of the population would have no immunity. And so this is in the context I have mentioned before. In addition, there are other reasons why we are concerned. And if you read the press, and you certainly do well, newspapers or specialized journals, there have been reports of H5N1 highly pathogenic virus, influenza virus, isolated from pigs. But eventually, and this was mentioned by a Chinese researcher in Beijing during a WHO consultation a few weeks ago. And in fact, she was, and this created havoc in a way, because you know that pigs are considered as the most likely reassortment vessel for the emergence of a pandemic strain of influenza virus. And this report, in fact, was relating to isolates which had been made or sampling, which was dating back 2 years or even more than that. So we have to be very careful with the type of news that are propagated. There is reports of highly pathogenic H5N1 healthy carrier states in domestic ducks, and that's also a concern to transmission to humans. And there is this reported family cluster with possible human-to-human transmission. And if you've looked at the Herald Tribune of yesterday, and I think that it was again in other journals today, this is mentioned. This is the human-to-human transmission has not been proved. It's one of the hypotheses on which you have to work. It's not been demonstrated. The viruses have not been yet characterized. So it's for the time being, it's a possibility, but it's not demonstrated. And the possibility of reassortment, the reassortment that would lead to the emergence of a pandemic strain, it can be directly from birds to, and then from domestic birds, the originator being, again, the migratory water birds, and the virus is different. Then the virus that circulates in domestic birds is not the virus that was originally in water birds. And then this virus mixed with reassort with a human virus and then acquire the possibility of being transmitted from human to humans. That this would be one. And then there is what I have mentioned before, the possibility of reassortment through the to pigs, swine, and then you observe the same phenomena and we would have this, this pandemic strain. A pandemic being defined as a major epidemic with rapid spread of a novel type of virus to all areas of the world, and which would lead to high number of illness and death in most age groups, which is different from a normal human epidemic strain, and this for approximately 2 to 3 years. And here you have, and I know that it's a little bit frightening, but some examples of pandemics, 1919, and the number of people who we think have died of the disease at that time, 20 to 40 million deaths with the Spanish flu of 1919, 1957, 1 to 4, 1968, 1 to 4 million deaths. And the next pandemic is, according to the specialists, is overdue. So you can expect it, apparently, any time. I will pass on this because this is too long and then conclude. WHO is, as I've shown, because of this particular context of today, extremely concerned by the situation. And WHO and its global influenza program is in pandemic preparedness mode, looking at vaccine trial or promoting vaccine trials, vaccine development, stockpiling of antiviral drugs, and other things. WHO, in any case, in this particular context, and because we are one world, needs to cooperate very effectively with other organizations. It's clear that WHO cannot do it all by itself, and no other organizations can do it all by itself. So, and we are in a particular situation, which is that major interventions to effectively reduce human exposure to highly pathogenic influenza viruses is not with us. It's something which is more with FAO. FAO is the organization, and other organizations, but FAO being a United Nations organization is one of our major partners in the field, that could help effectively reducing environmental contamination and thereby human exposure to these viruses. So we are looking for further cooperation with this organization and other organizations such as the WCS to improve the situation and improve the prospects rapidly. Thank you very much for your attention.